Pizza Noir by Denver Day, Book 1, Chapter 16. It was now past 00 hour. I said my goodnights to Joe and dear waitress, disembarked from the bar stool, and walked out to my car. It was still faithfully drizzling, washing clean the small new hours of that early weekend. Radials of the intermittent traffic made a bluish, slickly lubricated, glistening sound on the wet streets. I started my car, put on the AM talk very, very low, and let the defrost go to work before I put it in gear. The radio played muffled oldies as I motored to my apartment. I stepped out of the car and glanced up to my front door on the second floor, and there was Kitty, leaning on my apartment door. When I topped the stairs, she took one look at me and said, "Well, I'm tired too. Let's go to bed." "Amen, sister," I said, and we did. Saturday morning found us gently awakened by natural tides. The morning was uncharacteristically uninterrupted by phone calls from my ex-wife or teammates, bandmates, beer bashes, or my partner's stealthy flight in the night. We went at it for about an hour, and then we each had two bowls of generic Raisin Bran and cold milk for breakfast in bed. It was still raining. We had another go at each other, and then we shared a smoke, and I asked her who was tonight's lucky team. "One of the Seattle outfits, the Platin Switches," Kitty answered. "They have awesome uniforms. You're going to love it." We both showered up, watched cartoons for an hour or so, and then drove to lunch for pizza. And while we ate, we watched a minor league hockey game that all the TVs were tuned to. "I love it," I said. "Me too. A close second to my beloved banked track," she said. Meanwhile, to that convo, my phone rang, Dixie again. "Good news or bad news first, Ricky boy?" she asked. "Let's start with the good stuff," I instructed. "Okay, the good news is your three-way victims lasted through the night. They're still here, no funny stuff, still dead as far as I can tell, and still two-thirds of them are not yet furry monsters," she said. "Fantastic. Thank you. Good sell." "And the backside?" I asked. "Your sax player is in here." "I'm sorry," she said. "Come on down." And McKinney said he's hearing some shit from the other morgues dealing with the 1011 cases, or rather, shit about the people who are supposed to be in them but aren't. "We didn't want to bother you this morning. I figured you deserved to sleep in, and that this could wait until afternoon." "Gracias, Dixias. I'll be there directly," I said, and folded clothes my hand held. Kitty smiled at me, and I asked her, "You want to come with me to the morgue?" "Why not?" she answered. We finished our pie and went down to Dixie's cool, dry realm. Still rained, but it wasn't unseasonably cold, and we shook off the damp at the door. Dixie and Kitty exchanged greetings and pleasantries, and we all walked back to the body locker. "New intern?" Dixie smiled at me. She rolled out Tina and pulled back her tarp. "McKinney's got the paperwork on this deal. Our bandmates say that they had the night off last night. One of them showed up at her place, walked in and found this," Dixie said, pointing. "Looks like the implement was an axe. The blow was top down. It looked like a single, well-directed, powerful hit that split through her pan down into her neck like a log long ways. No sex assault, no violation otherwise, nothing but the axe. It seems like just one swing," she said. "Well, there you go, Kitty. Forensics in all its glamour and allure," I said. "Jeez," she purred. "What a mess." "Thank you, Dixie," I said. "Thank you, Ricky," she said. "Thanks, guys," Dixie said. I dropped off Kitty at Sandy's apartment, and Sandy plied me with a wet, open-mouthed kiss on top of Kitty's many recent ones through my driver's side window. She chatted me up for a few quick moments. "You've been cheating on me, Ricky. I plan to straighten your ass out," she bubbled. "You're due at my apartment after tonight's brouhaha. Do you read me? detective. The girls grinned at each other. Yes, loud and clear. Sounds like a date. Good luck among the platin, I said, and they waved me off, and I made my way to the office, finding McKinney at his desk with a few stories for me about the night before. Okay. I took a statement from the guy who found your late girlfriend. He was the bass player. He was pretty broken up, the tenant said. He really wasn't able to give any good leads, names, or suspects, though, of course. He did mention you. By his account and by yours, she was a solid gal, a former firefighter, a jazz saxophonist, granola, as you well know, model of a strong woman, a lady. Yeah, I don't like this at all, I replied, and no, she doesn't fit the victim profile of what we've been seeing lately. So there's very little else yet found at the scene and whatnot. I assigned the case to Smith since you were so recently intimate with this woman, but brief him and work with him as you need to. He's been out pounding the pavement today, and you probably won't see him until Monday. You okay? He asked thoughtfully. I'm fine. I've been kind of swept up with these skater girls in the past few days and the case. And I hadn't talked to Tina, but it's hard to say we drifted apart. It's been less than a week. There's been barely time to visit, much less drift. In other news, I've heard today that from some of the boys up and down I-5 on the 11 October murders of their respective jurisdictions. It seems there were lots of bar fights last night, and the scenes of last week's various crimes, at the scenes of last week's various crimes. A bit of a bloodbath, I would say. Various sightings, bashful, drunken patrons, slightly unwilling to explain to police what they saw. But it sounds like the girls were out last night, huh, in the chapel, McKinney said. Furry girls. Ah, the furries, I said. Yes, the furries, he said. Rousting about the bars of their last week's demise, working on people with the very instruments that were used toward their own ends, respectively, or at least just causing near riots because of the hirtus bitch-like undead condition their conditions are in. The lieutenant continued. The undead fuzzies in Vancouver made hell with the cricket bat freeze block death stick mysteriously procured from the evidence locker without a hitch. And likewise, apparently, any and all of the other evidence that was recycled last night and this morning from their respective evidence lockers. So, the boys in Seattle and Portland, as you would correctly assume, have been dealing with buckshot-filled titty bars and barflies all morning. Long views, last night's ape shit, you guessed it. Involves furries loose in nightclubs wearing itchy hot 357s, Beavertons dealing with the aftermath of a box cutter melee, and our lovely neighbor Eugene this morning is more or less one big gaping machete wound, and so on, all the way down I-5. Fantastic, I commented. Relatively quiet here, though? Yes, relatively, so far, he answered, but there's always tonight, Dick. And none of those other furries have shown back up at their morgue, so they're still loose, I guess. Lopez's phone with some somewhat more minor and slightly funnier, more benign apeshit from San Diego. He said the girls who'd reappeared last night had re-disappeared and they were wrapping up their shift early that morning. Their manager said he'd let me know if they show up again next Friday, he said. Uh-huh. Otherwise, Lopez continued, I'm hearing about the same bananarama from last night from the other towns, but let the record show that we haven't had any of the furries down here yet, anyway. It may be borrowing trouble like rubbernecking in traffic, but I'm sure I would be curious to see one of them. All told, it was relatively quiet here last night compared with the other towns involved. Yes, it's quite a sight, Lopez, and causes a funny kind of feeling in your insides, I said. I will be interested to see if it's October 10 yet again next Friday down at Cat Shakers. Yeah, no shit. At least they're not getting murdered over and over again, he said. As far as we know, that is. Give me a call in their little world if you get anything interesting, he said, and we hung up. As the afternoon came to an end, the drizzle had ceased very, very temporarily, and I telephoned Detective Smith. We'd picked him up from a city department about a year prior for slightly better pay and an opportunity to get out from under the traffic hat, though even McKinney sometimes finds himself standing at intersections pointing at automobiles. To protect and serve, keep the peace, stand in the rain, jump start minivans, you tag 'em, we bag 'em. Piss on spark plugs, whatnot, you name it. Hey, Smith, Thompson here. How's that coming? I asked. I've been talking to the band members all day. Her most recent party of interest is you. But she had plenty of ongoing boyfriends. It was her own axe that was used on her. Service axe, if you might. For firefighting days, her bandmates have given me a few leads on ex-boyfriends. I've done some background on them, a couple of art students. Most recently, a guy and a girl, a couple. And some of the band members over the years, but those occurrences have been rarer. One-night deals because they've wanted to keep the band intact and functional. I'm paying a visit to the art students next up. Any suggestions? Well, she used to work for the Forest Service, but you probably heard that from McKinney. Beyond that, she carried herself well, knew how to keep her nose clean. My guesses would be that it was some freakazoid who saw her at the hotel, where her band is the house band, and was there frequently enough to develop a fixation on her, an unhealthy fixation, and eventually then inappropriately act on it, highly inappropriately. I speculated. I'd say go there and look at the people. Look at the jugs. Thank you, Thompson, he said. No problem, see you Monday. And we hung up. About that time, McKinney went out the door with his briefcase off to be with his wife and promised me he wouldn't be around the office on Sunday, come hell or high water. This had been well enough of the office for a Saturday to suit my taste as well. If I'm going to work on the weekends, it's preferably field work, even if it all seems to blend together in the end. I walked over to the diner for refreshments and a quick rest before the sun went down and the liquors went up. I fought off the urge to call Dixie to see if our people in the morgue were still there, but she wasn't down there this afternoon anyway, and if she had something, she'd be in touch, I figured. After I ate, I drove around the city for a while. Passed by the Diddler and drove past Tina's band's hotel where they were fresh out of sax players. I thought morbidly, I passed by the squeeze box, both the Diddler's and the squeeze box's parking lots were filling up as the night got underway.